Prepare to be astonished!
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Welcome to Adventures in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here this evening with Mac Burns with the Clatsop County Historical Society.
And you're doubling up on me.
We
are Providence.
There are two of us in the room.
I'm excited.
Yes.
Do you want to do the honors?
Well, yes. I'm glad to welcome Ms. Sherilyn Fry here this evening to talk about Providence adventures and also her adventures, which she has had a fascinating background. Just Google her, folks, at home if you want even more to the story.
Well, if they just Google her, then what are we even...
I said more.
Oh,
more to the story.
Okay.
Because she's not going to be able to talk about all of it.
Okay, I thought you were about to make us superfluous.
No, not at all. So welcome, Sherilyn. We're glad to have you here.
Thanks, Alana. Thanks for having me. Thank you, Matt.
Excuse me.
Well,
because I feel like we got so much stuff we're going to talk about, I want to get through the history highlights really fast.
Let's do it.
So I have nothing personal to report. So do you, before we get to things?
No, we're
okay,
good.
So let's get to it. So these are things that happen tomorrow, March 15th.
Okay.
44 BC, you knew I had to start out with the Ides of March.
Yes.
Julius Caesar, not a good day for him.
not at all.
And not just one guy stabbing him in the back, but 60 of them. So, yeah, 60 people.
Yeah. But made for good stories.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay, 1493, Columbus returns to Spain after his first voyage to to North America.
Oh, there we go.
He tells everybody he discovered this place because nobody knew it existed.
Of course he did.
Even though there were millions of people here and even though the Vikings had already been here, nobody knew it existed.
Good traveling white man there.
Yes. 1783. And I like this one. In an emotional speech in Newburgh, New York, George Washington asks his officers not to support the Newburgh conspiracy. The plea is successful and the threatened coup never takes place.
Ooh.
A lot of people don't remember. All of his officers were all annoyed and mad at the Continental Congress, and they were going to stage a coup.
Okay.
And he talks him out of it.
Good
he
leader.
He says, keep, have the faith and trust me, I'm going to do my best, and they support him. So good for him. 1812, the first Russian settlement in California at Russian River.
Yeah.
We always forget the Russians were there.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't just in Alaska, they were in California.
Russian River.
That's right. 1820, Maine enters the Union. Way to go, Maine.
Yeah.
It's one of the states I've never visited.
Me either. Sherilyn?
Yes, I've been there.
I've been close.
Good skiing.
Is it wonderful?
It's beautiful.
See, I kind of think I would like Maine a lot, but I've just never been. I've been close, within 20 miles of the border, but just never went.
Okay.
Okay. 1892. Oh, I was gonna not give the year. The first escalator is patented.
Oh, I have another 1892 one.
1892. I have a couple. I bet you have this one,
oh,
too.
Okay.
1892, the New York State unveils the automatic ballot booth voting machine.
Now, see, the year on that one is what got my attention. 1892, the first automatic ballot voting machine.
You couldn't stuff the ballot box anymore.
Yeah. Seems very interesting.
It was automated.
Yeah.
No fake. No fooling.
Right.
All right. And we never had any controversies or anybody's ever said anything bad since.
Right.
1913, first presidential press conference. Woodrow Wilson.
Good for him.
Yeah. 1965. And this was almost going to be my history highlight. LBJ calls for equal rights, voting rights. LBJ.
Yeah, that is good.
Sometimes we give too much credit to Kennedy when it was LBJ that did a lot of civil rights stuff.
Sure.
1985, the first internet domain name is registered. Symbolics.com. Mm-hmm. And I forgot, I was going to check to see if it's still active.
Well, I'm sure it is.
But our... history highlight of the day, thing I think had the most impact on history, 1917, Tsar Nicholas II abdicates the Russian throne, giving way for Soviet Union and Cold War and everything else.
The highlight of the day. That is
so,
a good one.
Poor Tsar Nicholas. Did not work out well for him. And he wasn't a bad guy from everything that I've read. So did I miss any?
No. There was a couple birthdays. Oh. One of your presidents, 1767, Andrew Jackson. Was born. And then also in 1933, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was born. So happy birthday.
How did I miss that?
I know.
Notorious.
Yes.
I love that she became like such an icon.
She's great.
Because she deserved it.
Yep.
So, but speaking of another icon.
Yes, we do.
Was that a good transition?
That was a good transition.
You don't consider yourself an icon. See, I think people that have done a lot in life tend to somehow downplay, like, oh, well, just, you know, it wasn't a big deal. But I think you've done a lot of things that we're gonna hear about and were pretty amazing. So tell us about yourself.
Well, being in the Northwest for 5 years, moving here from Manhattan with my husband and two therapy dogs to beautiful downtown, always sunny Seaside, and working for Providence Seaside Hospital as a hospital administrator, director of mission and spiritual care. It's the dream and job of a lifetime. I'm very fortunate, very blessed to be here.
But you came from just a small hospital in Manhattan.
Came from the Ronald McDonald House, which is the largest Ronald McDonald House in the globe.
In the world.
In the whole world, yes. Yeah. Oncology patients, just pediatric oncology, 95 rooms, mostly going to Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center for treatment of very rare childhood cancers. Mm. All from all around the world, they would come, every continent.
So tell me a little bit about that, because I'm kind of fascinated by it. It's an amazing thing to me from what I know about it. But I also think how sad it would be to be around kids with cancer, and how do you bring joy to their lives and to the parents that are going through this with them? And it just seems like it'd be very emotionally draining every day.
It depends on how you look at it and how you approach the ministry, but mm-hmm. it was very uplifting, because if the parents are happy, if mom's happy, the caregiver, then the child is usually happy. And it doesn't take much to make a little kid happy, you know, a toy, a therapy dog, a trip on a fire engine, or visiting the Statue of Liberty. We were, you know, in the biggest playground of the world, and everybody would donate to us all the time and take our kids everywhere. So, you know, going to the 4th of July fireworks on the East River or the Hudson River. So these kids, even though they were going through battles, they had the best that we could possibly give them.
And you were part of giving that to them, so.
Yeah, I had the privilege of 10 and a half years of working for them as a director there of family support services. So next to the job I have now, it was my second favorite job in my whole life.
So had you ever visited Seaside or Oregon, the coast? Or?
Yes. My husband and I met and got married in Seattle. I was working for Starbucks corporate at the time and recently gone back to graduate school. And we got married, and we would come down to Cannon Beach and Seaside, you know, on nice long weekend trips with our dogs, because we always travel everywhere with the pooches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where can you find towns that are more open and welcoming to your well-behaved canine family members?
But this transition, she just skipped over like a huge thing. So she worked for Starbucks corporate in Seattle, and is a... I give her all of the credit. She gives herself a part of the credit, but all of the credit for creating one of my favorite drinks from Starbucks. You were on the team that created...
Frappuccino.
I mean... Really? The Frappuccino?
The Frappuccino. It's been duplicated, right? I mean, everyone, even McDonald's has their own... They probably don't call it a Frappuccino because that's trademarked, but you were a scientist. Yes. So tell us about that, and then what led to the next chapter in your life.
Was trained as a chemist and started out in the food sciences, because you can always get a job in the food industry. People have to eat. Same as healthcare, you can usually find a good job in healthcare. So I pursued that through Nabisco, starting out making chocolate chip cookies and animal crackers in New Jersey. And then moved to Pepsi for 8 years. And
also on a good team there, too.
Yeah.
You helped create the...
Crystal Pepsi, the one and only clear cola.
Wow. And how does an invention like that or Frappuccino, I mean, how do you set out knowing that's the goal? Or does that, as you're trying different things and all of a sudden you realize you've got something, how does that work?
You're doing a lot of consumer research all over the country in A markets and B markets. You're talking to your constituents out there in the field. And then you come back with these concepts and you start noodling around with them in the laboratory. And then you take them to a pilot plant, and then you take them to a Pepsi plant to scale it up and see if it works or if it falls apart. And that's basically did that over and over again for 8 years at Pepsi. So the clear cola was probably the biggest flop in the cola world. But, you know, to this day, there's like a cult.
Yes.
You can get online and there's a clear Pepsi cult. And they did bring it back, actually, a few years ago. They were actually producing it here in the Northwest. I have a bottle on my desk.
Because everyone brought them to her. Because you say biggest flop, though, but it's so well known. So is it really a flop if you know it and you say the word Pepsi clear? I mean,
and everybody knows what you're talking
right.
about.
Right. I mean, that's not really, I can't imagine that Pepsi thought of it as a huge flop. They sold them all. Then they just stopped.
There was a parody done on Saturday Night Live and they brought, they called it Crystal Gravy. So it was like, you know, why would you make gravy clear? Why would you make cola clear? So, and it had Van Halen, a great song behind it. And it was introduced at the Super Bowl, 1992. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I've never had a product introduced by Van Halen at the Super Bowl.
Right, yeah. And then Frappuccino too, pretty big. But so after Starbucks or mid Starbucks, your life takes a turn.
Yeah, you get to be into your mid 30s and you I guess you would call it a midlife crisis. I was, you know, making good money and having fun at what I was doing, but it started to become a little bit hollow. You know, sugar and carbonated water and caramel color coffee. You know, I was putting a lot of that down young people's throats. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I started to think there should be a little bit more. And a lot of the big corporations do have community outreach now and do have corporate give back. But in those days, in the 80s and the early 90s, there wasn't corporate responsibilities as there is now and sensibilities and that giving back to the community. So I think that's what I missed.
Okay. And how did you find Seaside in Providence rather than going back to Rand McDonald House or something like that?
Well, they came to me, actually. When I left the corporate world and went back to Seattle University, great Jesuit university that it is, in up on the hill in Seattle, and started to develop a interest in theology and ministry. I figured I'd been in the corporate world for 20-some years, and I didn't want to go back for an MBA because I felt that I already had that type of training working for big companies. So I was being called towards the ministry, and Providence came to me. Actually, one night, sitting on the couch watching TV, late night news, there came a ad that said, "Come back to your calling," is what it said, quote unquote. So I hit it with, you know, and looked at it and said, "Well, Seaside was like one of the places, in, you know, the Northwest," and I'd spent time in the Northwest, you know, going to Washington State University, go Cougs, Seattle University, go Redhawks, and working for Starbucks. I thought, yeah, I've lived in the Northwest. My husband's from the Northwest, born and raised in Eugene, Oregon, go Ducks. And got to put those plugs in there.
Yeah, you're hitting them all.
I'm well-trained. And, yeah, they sent me, you know, application. They said, "We'd like you to come out here and talk with us." So they brought me out here. I guess they recruited me. So,
yeah. I love that story.
And then in a whirlwind, and a month later, she was, she had, I don't know how many employees you had, but one of them was fabulous, myself.
You?
I think you only had a couple employees at the time.
I'm still sad that she left.
I know. I work for the chief executive now, so I kind of, you know.
He stole
I went
stole
around
away.
Her, yes. But I had to also do a little different job. But
talk a little bit about the job of what you do.
I have the best job in the world. I get to help give away $250,000 every year to our North Coast service area, from Astoria down to Tillamook, and help folks with social service needs in our communities, such as providing housing and reentry for folks, and providing shelter and protection to victims of domestic violence or sexual abuse, help the food banks out, help foster kids out. It's really the best job in the whole wide world.
Because you're part of the you are part of the mission, but you are the mission director. So you connect those values that we talked about last week on Adventures in History, those sisters that came out here from Montreal, write to our community now and the existing organizations that are already here that we partner with on a daily basis. And you're also a Catholic chaplain by trade.
I am.
As well.
I am. I'm a scientist and a chaplain.
Well, that's amazing. So the programs that you just named, are those things that you have a hand in designing and creating and seeing firsthand, or are you responding to somebody who comes to you saying, hey, I've got an idea and I need some help to do this?
They exist in the community. They could use a little bit of extra financial aid. Last year, a lot of it was due to COVID and a lot of the restrictions and the extra needs that all these agencies had because of that. But these agencies exist in our community and partner with the hospitals and other agencies on a daily basis. So every few years, we do this needs assessment where we go into the community and we see what the social service needs are and how they align with our mission. So things come up like transportation, access to food, access to health care, mental health, housing. Mm-hmm. So these are the things that we then seek out these agencies and have them come and present to us. So we have a service area advisory council. We vote and then we distribute the funds on an annual basis according to what the community needs are.
So that's actually what I had in mind. I remember a program I heard at Rotary and forgive me, it might have been the two of you that came and presented it, but a driving service that you had for patients, yeah. And it didn't even matter if they were going to Providence or if they needed to go to Longview for something.
That's
they,
right.
They were reaching out to anybody that needed help.
That
and
was?
Yeah. That was probably 3 or 4 years ago. But I
did do that presentation.
But it stuck with me of what an amazing outreach that somebody, A, thought of it, and that, B, somebody was willing to put some resources behind it that so many of us just take those kinds of things for granted. And how many people in this community, in this region, can't get in a car and drive somewhere?
Well, that really goes to like the population health aspect of Providence, which I adore and I love because that is the mission, right? So it's looking at ways to keep all of us healthy. And it doesn't matter where you're going to go get your services because in the end, whether you go to our hospital or a different hospital, you're going to affect other people in the community. So that population health, if a mom gets sick, the child is going to get sick as well. So we want to keep that population with access to resources that these agencies that can provide.
And Alana helped to develop and administer that program before I was even on the North Coast. And it was a very successful program. Continues to be one of our fastest growing programs of all of our Providence services that we help to administer, and it's called Community Connections. And we do drive folks to their doctor's appointments in our service area, but also all the way to Portland and back again. So this is going to be growing in the future.
It's incredible. And what is the service? What do you consider for the Providence Hospital? What is the service area?
We are very geographically spread out. So it could be all the way from Washington State, the shores of Washington State, and of course the Astoria area, all the way down to Tillamook, and I would say east to at least Camp 18.
Right, I mean, Vernonia, yeah.
Maybe another few miles beyond Camp 18 as well. Yeah, I mean, we're just such a rural area that I always kind of wonder, you know, are people driving from 50 miles away, and I kind of think they probably are.
They are, especially when telehealth too exists with a large organization. So another interesting thing that Sherilyn did when she came here, and I believe it started even before she came, I got an email or a phone call from her that we were going to get a therapy dog program up and running. So the ball had already been rolling, but it was rolling very, very slowly. And so Sherilyn said, well, it's not going to be rolling anymore. It's just going to happen. It's going to happen very soon. And I want to say it was probably within 30 days we had a therapy dog program in place and up and running at the hospital. So tell us a little bit about that, because this is also what united you and your husband.
Yeah, we call it the Angel on a Leash Therapy Dog Program. It started way back about 25 years ago and in the Seattle area. And every hospital that we would end up working for or volunteering for, we would help start up that therapy dog program. So at Providence Seattle, the big Providence on Cherry Hill, that one, and then the VA hospital in Seattle. And then when we moved to New York to Terrence Cardinal Cook Healthcare, New York Presbyterian, and then the Ronald McDonald House, which was the biggest nut to crack because they would not allow, the oncologists would not allow therapy dogs or dogs of any kind with their pediatric oncology patients. But we showed the efficacy of the program, and we showed all the restrictions that we put on there as far as epidemiology was concerned, and we won over the top oncologist in the country from Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. When we came to Seaside, that was a very easy sell because at the time, Kendall Sawa, our CE at that time, loved dogs, as does Don Lemon, love dogs now. So more dogs are better. It's, we have a little bit of a slowdown due to COVID where we put more restrictions in place, but we'll come back. We'll come back soon and strong.
So what makes a good therapy dog? Is there a certain breed? Is it just the temperament? Is it the training? What goes into that?
My husband and I like to say, you know, people don't make therapy dogs. God makes therapy dogs. They're born that way. They come out of the womb that way, just like, you know, kids have different personalities, dogs have different personalities. And they're the type that will come up and seek attention from you. They'll put their paw on you. That's, we call that attention seeking. Or they'll lay down, roll over, and show you their underbelly for a scratch. And if your dog is doing things like that, you know you have a perfect therapy dog in the works. We just train the people. The dogs are already, you know, like God-given talents.
And it is like extensive training. I mean, this is one of the things that we really promote as well, because yes, the dog can have all of those traits, but it takes a lot of time and training, hours and hours of training for the dog and the handler to become registered as a therapy dog. Therapy dogs are not service dogs and can never be. They can never be both. It's one or the other. Mm-hmm. And then at Providence, our therapy dogs actually get onboarded as volunteers, the dog itself along with the handler, and have their own name badge and everything so that they can get on campus. But it's a very strict process to follow and to become registered.
And Alana did administer that program also.
So the ones that are on duty right now, what kinds are they and how many are there? And do they go home with the handler? I assume they don't stay at the hospital.
Yes. The handler does own the pet. And we were up to 12 in the program before COVID hit last year. So as we come back, we might not be starting out at 12 again. And, you know, some retire due to attrition or for illnesses, or sometimes the handler becomes older or infirmed and can't provide that service anymore. But we were constantly in the community. A few years ago, we did a friend raiser at the country club, which Alana helped with, and they did a video. And, you know, it draws people in. So it not only draws patients in their family members and helps calm them while they're in our facility, but it also attracts donors, and it also attracts folks that you can, you know, raise a little bit of awareness and a little bit of happiness in the community because of that. So we're excited to come back. Probably this late spring or early summer we'll be back.
What was interesting to me was that for the most part, these therapy dogs, when we counted at the end of the month, most of their contacts were with staff. And then the feedback was incredible, right? So when you talk about really building up and supporting your staff, traumatic things happen in a hospital, and they happen often. Those therapy dog teams, again, are trained to go into those situations with very tough situations, sad situations, and be able to provide that therapy immediately to staff, to grieving families. And that was always really... it just made me very happy, because no matter what time or day, we were really able to respond quickly and get these volunteers. They're volunteers into the building and to respond.
And it makes so much sense. I never would have thought of that. I would have just strictly thought about, you know, picturing a patient and somebody bringing the dog in and it cheers them up and maybe they go through chemo a little better today. I never even thought about all the other people, the employees and doctors and nurses and others that might need a little cheering up and a little...
We had
staff
meetings even where managers would request a visit.
When we do have a crisis in our community, we will bring in the most highly trained of the therapy dog teams. And these are people like myself or my husband or other nurses or other clinicians that have also gone through the program. We use that to de-escalate situations. We also use it to calm the staff and to give the staff a little respite. So we've used them several times in the last few years when a crisis does present itself to us.
Now, do you ever use anything besides dogs? Do other programs use cats or monkeys? Or I mean, is there other animals that are trained
miniature horses.
Are smart enough to do it?
Only miniature horses because they have been used as service animals in the past. But any animal, I think, in an outpatient or an outside setting might be able to be used. But for acute care and in hospital settings, I would only recommend using the canine.
Yeah. Although I like the idea of little ponies, little horses. Yes. That would make me smile too. But I was thinking, like, when you described any animal that's friendly. I mean, my cat's friendly, but my cat's also just selfish. And as soon as you've pet her for 2 minutes, then she's done with you and she runs away. It'd be a terrible therapy animal. It'd make you happy for about 10 seconds.
We're winding down our show, and we did promise just a little bit more history too. And I know that you did a little bit of research. Is there anything else you wanted to add about Providence Seaside and really how we moved?
Oh yeah, you know, starting here with St. Mary Hospital back in 1880, purchasing of a hotel and helping to restore that hotel, beautiful hotel on the hill, and you know, operating that for many, many years until the need presented itself in the South County area for the Seaside Hospital to come into being, which kind of, you know, because it is a critical access hospital, we have a very specific role, which I think we play well in the community. And as we've built that ministry up and had different agencies come into our fold, like the clinics from Astoria all the way down to Cannon Beach, home health services where we're going into the patient's home, rehab services, and now building, you know, a new emergency department, which is beautiful and has doubled our capacity, over 10,000 patient visits a year for the ED, and also our walk-in clinic, 24, it's open 7 days a week, almost 10,000 visits a year. And cardiac specialties, bringing in all kinds of specialty doctors now and providers, so you don't need to drive into Portland for that specialty doctor. You know, we can provide that person here for you. So, you know, our new CE, Don Lemon, has done a great job to build up the capacity for access to primary care and to specialty care within the last 4 years that he's been here. So we're very blessed in that aspect.
I think you're very generous because I think you had a lot to do with that as well.
Yes. was Alana.
we need to bring you back because I lost track of time.
I know.
This was great.
Can we do one more? So what would Mother Joseph say? So she had her harrowing visit across the Columbia River Bar, stayed one night in Astoria, probably said she'd never come back. What do you think she says looking down on us today from what their vision was then to what Providence is today?
Other than I wish they had Dramamine back then. I'm sorry.
Perfect. No, that's perfect.
Probably perfect. And she may have had, she was also known for being a little, she had a very colorful language.
Salty.
Yes, a little salty. There we go, which fits with our working class area.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Sherilyn, for joining us today. Yeah. It's so great to have you here and to share the stories
thank
of
you,
Providence.
Alana. Thank you, Gus.
Yeah, thank you, and go make some history. We'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Mac.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.